Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag. NFL Week 14 Monday Night Football, the main topic at hand here. But before we get to the game between the Vikings and the Seahawks, and we recap the weekend that was, I am, of course, your fearless leader, Todd Furman, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the perpetually sick Payne Insider.
I'm not sick, asshole.
It's debatable. Before we got on, you're hawking up along. You're talking about Zycam this, Zinc that. I'm starting to worry about you. I mean, you're too young to be falling apart at the seams.
It's a long season. Fortunately, it's almost over. Good grief.
I mean,
college football has been awesome. The NFL, been a battle.
It has definitely been a grind, but, you know, I talked to my injury sources, and of course, we'll have Dr. Chow to break down all things NFL, but I talked to some of my injury sources down in your neck of the woods, and I hear you've been playing through a little bit of pain that may be limiting your ability to use the keyboard, all of your digits on your shooting hand not quite working the right way.
I was telling you this about before the season started. I was playing basketball, and I got fouled. I mean, I got hacked. I got crushed, and my thumb was just messed up, and I just figured, you know, sprain some ligaments, and after a few weeks, it went away. Then, like, 2 weeks ago, like an asshat, I just cracked my thumb, and it has just been killing me ever since, so playing through some injury there. Figure out what's happening.
All right, I know.
Certainly, the keyboard strokes aren't as efficient.
Well, I was going to say, and I know the follow-up question, because I have to ask, because I know our listeners are going to want to know, when Payne Insider goes out there to play a little pickup basketball, I mean, are we talking like a court on the beach where it's like rough and tough in some of the sketchier neighborhoods? Are you going to like the YMCA for the old man's game? Are you trying to beat up on some of my compatriots at the JCC? Just give us a little visual for the kind of pickup game you're participating in.
Back in the day, based on proximity, I was one of the lone non-members of the crew. But yeah, the JCC, I would frequent that. They would try to charge me $5.
Yeah, I can't have you knocking Moishe's yarmulke off when you guys are out there in a pickup game.
So that wasn't overly competitive. I was a little better than that range. When you get out to the park, it's a little different vibe, more of a, just kind of stand there and shoot some open jump shots, grab a rebound, that kind of thing, depending on what type of shape you're in, right? During the summer, a little better shape. Coming right out of summer and football season where you're spending like 16 hours in a chair, then you're kind of delegated just grabbing some rebounds and hitting open shots.
You're the Mike Miller type, sitting out that side hoping you get an open jumper or two. Just have to make sure you knock it down, so keep feeling in the game. But hey, Nate,
speaking of Mike Miller, don't mention that name after the Yale debacle a couple weeks ago.
Oh, the battle wounds and scars that plague all of us as sports bettors. But we could go into that for days, minutes, hours. I mean, you name it. Do want to say to our listeners out there, I know all you folks listening, you guys have been great with your 5-star reviews on iTunes. Go over there, rate us, promote us, share the gospel of Bet the Board for the National Football League, college football. This thing continues.
Another contest promotion
for the holidays.
Yes, we're going to do 2 winners this time. For the holidays, we'll call it the Hanukkah and Christmas presents. We're gonna deliver both. So get in there, leave your 5-star iTunes reviews. In about a week or two, we will announce 2 winners. Again, it's at random. So if you leave your 5-star review, leave a nice little comment, you're automatically entered for the prizes, and we'll give away 2 this time for the holiday season. It's a nice Bet the Board swag pack with Visa gift cards and gear.
Payne Insider in a festive mood this holiday season.
No polls will be given out.
I'm not even going to go there, giving away the goodies. All right, what we always do on Monday to recap the weekend that was, we kind of go through a what did we learn type segment, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And Payne, I mean, I want to give you the floor because you were part, I mean, just by proximity to a Miami miracle yesterday against the New England Patriots.
What a game. What a time to be alive. I don't know if I like that result or not. If you notice, and I think a lot of, I don't know how many people are tracking line movement, but there was like this manual adjustment Friday evening where it went from like 7.5 to 8.5, right to 10 at some of the sharper shops. So while the Patriots were certainly the public side, one of the sharpest teaser legs of the entire week was the New England Patriots. So, wasn't a fan of Tom Brady's execution there before the half, after the blocked punt, where he oversails Chris Hogan there and then takes a sack and you get no points. But I thought it was in the bag. So, I don't think we're going to make the playoffs anyway. So, it's going to be all for naught. I lost money, basically. That was the leg of the teaser that would have closed things out in cash. So that one was a tough one to swallow. I know there was someone on Twitter, and I'm going to butcher his name or completely forget his name altogether, but he tweeted Dave Mason and myself saying, hey, that was probably a great result for both of you. And while the Dolphins did get a win, I don't know if it's going to result in the playoffs. So that I would have rather taken my teaser leg win there.
Understandable. Yeah, definitely one of the more improbable finishes that we see, not only of week 14, obviously, but maybe the entire season. Because a team like the Patriots typically executes that a little better. I'm still trying to figure out how Rob Gronkowski is your last line of defense, knowing that he moves about as well as a cruise ship does in a harbor, as you saw him floundering, trying to make the tackle late. But, hey, Bill Belichick's a smarter man.
Well, it's the package. It's the package. That was the thing. I think that was the problem with it. They went Hail Mary package. And so Gronk is in on that, and McCourty's out. It's been that way for a while. But the package was the problem, right? I don't know why he's out there. Like, you think about Ryan Tannehill, he's got the AC joint issue. And then he had the ankle sprain. Like, he was never, and I mean ever, getting it 70 yards in the air into the end zone. So the Hail Mary package and the Hail Mary were completely out of the question. So I don't know why. But listen, tip your cap to the Dolphins. It looked like they knew what they were doing, right? It was in rhythm. It was executed perfectly. Gase designed it. So his three best players, his three most dynamic weapons, all touched it on the same play. It looked pretty good. So I don't think, I mean, certainly it was lucky, but it was executed well.
It makes me wonder if the Patriots would have been better served just trying to score a touchdown instead of kicking a field goal to go up five. But, hey, I'm not going to sit here and break down the math or claim that I know exactly what went through the thought process. But it would have been crazy if we saw that end of game finish executed and then the hook and ladder in the Steelers game, which came up a little bit short. But before we get into some of the bad and the ugly, because there was plenty of it, some other things, Payne, that jumped out to me. Andrew Luck, a nice bounce-back performance against the Houston Texans secondary that we had major questions about going into the game. 27-41, almost 400 yards, two touchdowns, second game this season where he's torched the Texans. And for whatever reason, the Texans, just no answer for T.Y. Hilton, 199 yards receiving. Thankfully, to our
you mean Jonathan Joseph isn't very good?
No, I don't think anybody on that back end. And you want to talk about a bumbling idiot. I mean, I'm sure we could go on and on about Bill O'Brien, but we may have to try and let him avoid the firing squad. 49ers, they did well not only on the field, but obviously by the listeners as well, winning outright as a four-point dog. George Kittle, hell of a half. Seven catches for 210 yards. Not sure where he was in the second half. They held Denver to less than 4 yards per play. But what were some of the other things that you saw that you felt were pretty promising from the week that was in the National Football League?
It's the Cleveland Browns, baby. It's all about the Brownies. Winning 3 out of 4. The game they do lose, 8.2 yards per play on offense. Freddie Kitchens is an absolute monster, and I'm glad we're ahead of the curve on that. I mean, he came out this week and was like, hey, we're going to use Rashad Perriman. And everyone like looked at him like he had 12 heads. And what do you know? Like, right out of the gate, just play action deep. The big F you to everyone who thought he was messing with them. And it's just, it sets the tone for the game. The Jarvis Landry touchdown, like how well designed was that? That was awesome.
They came back and used the same play later in the game with similar success too.
Yeah. 7.7 yards per play for the Cleveland Browns offense. And I know the scoreboard only says 26, but you miss a PAT. Higgins, drops a walk-in touchdown before the half, so you have to settle for three. I mean, there could have easily been 31 on the board. This Cleveland offense right now is humming pretty good, except, you know, again, even against the Texans, 8.2 yards per play, but it looks like Baker's got his head back in the game a little bit. There was a little too much going on early in the preparation of the Texans week where he was still thinking about Hugh Jackson in the Cincinnati game, which was a little concerning, but it looks like he's got his head on right this week.
Definitely a step in the right direction. Dallas Cowboys offense, one last team I want to give credit, 32 first downs. They run 93 plays to only 48 for the Eagles, almost 600 yards of offense, and even with all the mistakes, Dak Prescott makes some of the big throws. We know Ezekiel Elliott continues to be the Eagles' kryptonite, and a team that we've seen struggle handling prosperity in the past could have very easily spit the bit in that particular game, end up winning. And much of the chagrin, I'm sure, of some of the sharper guys out there covering in overtime by six, but to the bad pain. And
what were you doing with that game? I almost decided to fade those guys after I watched.
Which particular spot?
Oh, the Cowboys.
Oh, okay.
We kind of talked about that game a little bit in the over leaked there. I don't know if our listeners were kind of, I got a little rattled. We were looking over 43 in that game, and while we were recording, someone pounded it and ended up closing 45.5, and I know it didn't look good early, but all the matchups were there, and finally, once execution took place, the game still got over there despite the low-scoring first half.
Second time, though, between those two teams where you have a first half that looks like it's dead on arrival. Your things, to a certain extent, start to pick up in the third quarter, but the fourth quarter is where the game went to explode. I mean, very similar to the Sunday night game, which ends up going over the total as well earlier in the campaign.
I really wanted to lay three, especially late, like right before kick, when you kind of saw what Washington did and who they were, and potentially those back-to-back wins for Philly were a little bit fraudulent. I just thought the matchups were good. I like what the Cowboys offense is doing right now. Right, I mean, Zeke had those four extra days of rest, which we outlined, and instead of the required 30 touches we talk about, he got 40. And it's smart touches, right? It's not just all between the tackles, right? He had 12 catches on 13 targets. Like, those are efficient touches, not just like in the run of play, but because how he's being tackled, right? It's usually like one body outside, or he's running out of bounds, or it's like a corner, a safety. It's not like seven 300-pound dudes just on top of him and doing weird shit to him in a pile. Like, those are efficient touches for Zeke. And then Amari Cooper, I think we were kind of both wrong on him a little bit. He's really been rejuvenated. He's turned that offensive around. So outside from Dak having a few brain farts, that offense was humming.
Yeah, they put together some of the best numbers we'd seen from. We know there were questions around the Eagles' defense, but at the same time, you have to go out there and take advantage, and Dallas was able to do so. Be interesting to see how they handle it again this week when they take things on the road against the Indianapolis Colts. I don't want to try and, like, bait you again into a Mike Tomlin rant, but do you have anything interesting and revealing to say about the Steelers and yet another dreadful road performance from them?
Not really. I'm not going to say Oakland was, I thought Oakland would win the game, but there's a reason they got buried, right? It was like plus 11, closed 9.5 at some of the sharper shops. Oakland shockingly played well if you've been paying attention. Like, the last four games, they beat Arizona on the road. They were real competitive in the Baltimore game. That was a fluke score. Like, turnovers and special teams plays kind of ballooned that phony score. They gave the Chiefs all they could handle, kind of matched them score for score. And so against the Steelers here, they weren't outside the number one time. They were inside the number for the full 60. But you knew going into that game, Pittsburgh wasn't going to be able to run the ball. Right? They're struggling to do so the last few games with Connor. And then you get guys like Samuels and Ridley. Like, those aren't those dudes. Like, so it was going to be a one-dimensional game. And as bad as Oakland's defense is, this is the NFL. If you were a defense facing a one-dimensional offense, you're going to have some success no matter who it is. So it wasn't all that shocking to me. Carr, I thought, played very well, but I'm not going to kill Tomlin. Like, we know what it is. His clock management is terrible. We saw him last year in the playoffs in the biggest game in a standalone spot in front of the world not figure out that he needed two scores against the Jaguars. Scored a touchdown with no time on the clock. Hey, bonehead, maybe kick your field goal and then go on sides where you have 40 seconds left. No, you need two scores. Like, he's terrible with clock management. So this wasn't shocking to me.
Speaking of field goals, Chris Boswell going to be the Steelers kicker this weekend against the Patriots still?
Man, I don't know. He was so good the past few years. I don't know what's going on with him. That's a tough one to miss. And you don't have the excuse of Heinz Field, which is one of the toughest places in the NFL to kick. But yeah, you can't miss that one.
Yeah, that's tough. Miss the extra point earlier in the game. And then, of course, from the good, the bad, we naturally have the ugly. And I think there's only one poster child for this. And we can point the finger at Mark Sanchez. We can give the Redskins as a whole a failing grade. But, Payne, what do we make of what Jay Gruden has going on there with this Redskins team? I mean, I know Monday night they were dealt a rough hand against the Eagles. But the effort or lack thereof against the Giants was staggering yesterday.
You know, Mark Sanchez started the game 3-for-10. 14 yards and two picks. And
hey, one of those picks was at least a touchdown pass, so I got to give him credit for that.
That is true. And you listen to Gruden and you listen to some of the guys talk on Monday Night Football against the Eagles, they're like, hey, the sole reason for Mark Sanchez being employed is because he knows the system. Well, if that's the damn system Gruden's running, I mean, change your system. but I don't think it is, right? I think it's Sanchez. I think at this point, like, he's done. He's cooked. You kind of want to give Washington's offense a reprieve. They've just been like decimated with offensive injuries. This is the second year in a row, but I would think Josh Johnson has got to be the guy because he at least provides an element that's tough to game plan for, right? He can use his legs. It doesn't look like he's going to turn the ball over as much as Mark Sanchez. And you kind of knew this was going to be an issue because you watched Monday Night Football, and I get Sanchez hadn't been there a while, but he was unwilling to attack the areas of the Philadelphia defense that needed to be attacked. He is a dink and dunk guy, and that wasn't how you beat Philadelphia. So it was, he wasn't willing to make those throws in that game. You would have thought maybe an extra week of prep rather than coming in cold off the bench would have changed some things, but he's just not a good quarterback at this point.
Yeah, a team that's going to be very interesting to see them play out the stretch. Of course, they're on the road this weekend against Jacksonville, a game that about nine people will watch with the lowest total of the NFL regular season. Poised to be at betonline.ag with a 36. From the good, the bad, the ugly, pain into some of the look-ahead adjustments. We post those every single week on the Bet the Board podcast website so folks can take a look at them to see what the numbers would have been before the previous week's games had been played. And as I go through, we do have some Saturday football on the docket, and one of those numbers has been on the move. When we look at the Broncos, currently at betonline.ag, they're a 3.5-point favorite playing host to the Cleveland Browns. You talked about Freddie Kitchens and this new-look Browns offense, but look-ahead number here would have had the Broncos a 6-point favorite before they went on the road and laid an egg that we forecasted against the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, I mean, just two teams with opposite results the past week, obviously, and then there's some underlying things. I think if you asked Broncos fans to name a few guys you absolutely couldn't be without before the season started, they're probably going to say guys like Chris Harris or center Matt Paradis. So those two guys are out. And then once you trade away Demaryius Thomas, losing Emmanuel Sanders becomes massive because now your best two guys are rookies, right? It's Sutton and Deshaun Hamilton. What are they going to provide for you? Still obviously a long shot to make the playoffs, but this would be their season on the line for sure. But we just talked about how well the Browns are playing. So I think there's some opportunities there for that offense to succeed without Chris Harris. You mentioned Kittle at the top of the show. The secondary for the Broncos has been porous all season, was starting to trend just a little bit better, but without Chris Harris, they have nothing in the secondary. So it'll be interesting to see how Freddie Kitchens and Baker Mayfield attack that Broncos defense.
Yeah, guys running open all over the place. We talked a little bit about the Raiders and how well they're playing. You see the market responding accordingly. They'll go on the road to Cincinnati, where it's the Bengals, a 3-point favorite, lay $1.20 at betonline.ag. Current number, look ahead for this particular game, had the Bengals minus 4.5. But I do have to say, to the Bengals' credit, they fought valiantly on the road at the Chargers and came up just a few yards short of even pushing that game to overtime.
It was clear they didn't quit. And so that was what you like to see this time of year. Jeff Driscoll does. I like what I'm seeing from him, and I'm a little surprised to say that kind of following his career path. He was a five-star kid, number one quarterback out of high school, went to Florida, kind of fizzled out there, went to La Tech, certainly played nice, but against lesser competition. So I was a little surprised to see how well he's playing. He's got some nice zip on his ball. He provides a different element, I think, offensively, because he can really move where Dalton can't. He's physical as well. And they had a touchdown stripped away from them in the first half as well, and then they were going for it on fourth and inches, and of course, because Marvin Lewis, the head coach's team, isn't prepared and or disciplined, so there was a false start from the inch-yard line, which forced them to kick a field goal instead of going for it on fourth and an inch. But, you know, when you look at this game, I don't know where the value's at this point. It feels, I like how Oakland's playing, but, you know, this is a tough spot for them. Certainly the line's deflated a little bit. Be interesting to see where the money comes in. I saw places open 3.5. You're now down to a juiced 3. I want to monitor, see who's healthy for that Cincinnati defense. There could be a couple guys potentially coming back this week.
A game that I'm sure we're going to preview in depth on Thursday's episode of the Bet the Board podcast. The Indianapolis Colts paying a 3-point home favorite against the Dallas Cowboys at betonline.ag. This look-ahead line, surprisingly, was listed at a pick'em.
Yeah. How many home run efforts can Dallas produce in a row, I think, is the big question there. For me, if you have an ability to read the market, it's going to be tough to find yourself on Dallas this week. That's kind of where I'll leave that, and we'll discuss it on Thursday.
The last but not least, of course, the Seahawks have yet to play, and we will get to the Seahawks game against the Minnesota Vikings later on in the show. You're looking at a current number here for the Seahawks, 4.5 at betonline.ag, subject to change based on tonight's result. Look-ahead number here, though, had the Seahawks a full touchdown favorite for the revenge trip, for the second meeting in a revenge-type scenario for the 49ers as a full touchdown home underdog.
Yeah, quick turnaround revenge game, obviously. I thought San Francisco, if you looked at the box score in the first game, it didn't yield what the final scoreboard did. They had two turnovers against Seattle. Inside the 10-yard line, you had the fumble from Wilson Jr. at about the 6, and you could debate if it was a fumble or not. It probably wasn't. It looked like his butt was down. And then you had the pick 6 at the goal line. The huge momentum play before half where you're potentially getting the ball at midfield on the punt going in for more points. It's muffed. Instead, Seattle gets it. Plus, they get it out of the half, and they return it for 85 yards on the kickoff. So, there was just a lot of things that went against San Francisco in that game, but down to down, I thought they played pretty well. The look ahead was 7 here. You're now down to 4.5 or 5.5, depending where you shop. This game will probably gets taken off the board pretty quickly into tonight's Monday Night Football game. So if you were dead set on a side, might make sense going early, but I don't see anything at this number right now, but it will be interesting to see where this reopens based on tonight's results, and that will certainly be the case. If Seattle goes out and absolutely drubs Minnesota, you could probably see this reopen closer to where the look-ahead was.
Always interesting to keep tabs on it, but from the games that were played to the games that will be played coming up, some of your favorite players that may or may not be on the field this coming weekend.
Are you injured or are you hurt?
When injuries occur in the NFL, there's only one man to turn to.
If you hurt, you can still play. If you're injured, you can't.
Let's check in with 17-year NFL team doctor turned medical analyst, Dr. David Chow.
So are you hurt or are you injured?
This is Chow's Corner.
He joins us every Monday here on the Bet the Board podcast. You can follow Dr. David Chow on Twitter at ProFootballDoc. He is the best in the business in terms of identifying injuries to impact your sports betting and your fantasy purposes. And Dr. Chow, it wouldn't be a Sunday in the National Football League without some injuries to marquee players. And I know Payne has a few questions for you. But before we get there, when we look to Monday Night Football, Seattle's Doug Baldwin has been dealing with a myriad of lower body injuries, whether it's a hip, whether it's a groin. What do you see as expectations for his productivity or ability to even make the field in tonight's matchup against the Minnesota Vikings?
Well, I think in a normal situation, I think you'd expect him to be out. He hasn't practiced, and with the myriad of injuries, lower extremity and muscle injuries for a wide receiver. But knowing Doug Baldwin, there's going to be this game time decision and see what he can do. If he does play, I don't see him getting his full complement of usual targets. But, he's been effective on limited practice before, being the veteran that he is.
And Dr. Chow, just kind of talking about some of the bigger injuries this weekend, let's move on to Big Ben. Looks like a rib injury, did return late in the Oakland game. What do we think about his status against the Patriots next week?
Well, I think his status, he should be fine. I expect him to be limited and maybe even miss practice time this week. But with medication and a rib block or whatever is needed there, they've got the good medical staff. He's going to play against the Patriots. First of all, that's always Big Ben's mantra, right? He loves coming back on the Willis Reed moment and playing. He's done it throughout his career. And, as I tweeted, if it were something with his chest or lungs, okay, maybe he's going to miss. But if it's just a rib, which is what the report was, I didn't see how he didn't come back in the second half, and I still don't understand why he didn't come back earlier.
And how do we feel? Go ahead. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, I said, I don't know if it was a coaching decision in some way. I don't know if it was a Big Ben issue. It's medically, it doesn't make sense. If your rib is bothering you, it bothers you from the jump. It doesn't like, and it continues to bother you. It doesn't like ease up in an hour of standing on the sidelines in the second half. And it did seem like they were trying to, quote, save him or use him as in an emergency situation. And when the Raiders got up, then he came into the game and put him ahead, but then the Raiders came back. So to me, that's playing with fire, right? I mean, it's a four-point game, and you leave him on the sideline. What doesn't make sense to me is the explanation from the head coach, which was something to the effect of we were in a flow, and because of the flow of the game or whatever it was, it's hard to get him back in. The backup quarterback, I mean, they didn't put any points on the board with the backup quarterback, and I think his quarterback rating was 12.0, so I'm not sure what flow he was talking about.
12 is a high passer rating when comparing him to Mark Sanchez. And I think we're also talking about Mike Tomlin. He leaves a lot to be desired from the coaching realm. So there's always lots of question marks with him. Just one last thing on the Pittsburgh Steelers. James Conner, what's the realistic expectation for him? Will he play this week? And maybe how long will this injury linger on?
Well, you know, it sounds like we're bashing Mike Tomlin here. I'm not. I mean, obviously, James Conner's initial report from Coach Tomlin was a contusion, and then it switched to the ankle. And as it continues to potentially last, it fits the high ankle sprain that we talked about last week and initially in the whole deal of what it looked like. And it's hard to say. It's hard to rule him out so quickly for a week from now based on the high ankle. But certainly he's far from guaranteed to play, and there was some word that he was going to be doubtful, and that does fit with the high ankle. But I don't think this is going to be season long or out for the rest of the season for James Conner. I think it's a milder high ankle, which, you know, a week, 2 weeks out and then back is about what I'm thinking.
Good news for a Steelers ground attack that has really, really been befuddled the last few weeks. The next guy I want to ask you about, and it's probably someone that will keep you busy for the next decade if the Ravens franchise decide to go this route at quarterback, Lamar Jackson missed the final few plays with the ankle injury. He said he's fine post-game presser. Do we expect the ankle to be 100% next week against Tampa?
Well, do I expect it to be 100%? No. I mean, if an injury is bad enough to need x-rays, it's unlikely he's going to be 100%. But he may be 95, you know, and quite effective in terms of his mobility. Yeah, that's the worry on Lamar Jackson. I mean, I don't care if you're Cam Newton and really big. You still can get hurt if you're carrying the ball as many times as he is. I mean, his rushes and his four starts are 27, 11, 17, and 13. That's a lot of rushes and designed rushes. And as we know, the majority of quarterbacks that get injured across the league get injured when they're out of the pocket and scrambling and or running the football. So that's always the risk on Lamar Jackson.
Another quarterback injury, Ryan Tannehill, looked like he got his ankle stepped on. What does his prognosis look like? I know he returned, but any side effects potentially next week against Minnesota?
Well, yeah, that one, he actually did get hurt in the pocket. His offensive lineman stepped on his right ankle. Standard inversion sprain, that's why he was able to get taped, spatted, and return in the second half. Although it did stiffen up, right? I mean, yep. If anyone's sprained their ankle playing basketball, if you keep playing, you know, lace your shoes up tighter and keep playing, you actually get through it better than, you know, if it's a game of pickup ball and you lose once and you have to sit for 15 or 20 minutes, that really gets sore and stiff on you. But I don't see how he misses next week at this point in time.
And what about Xavien Howard? He's been a real stud at the cornerback position, kind of had a quiet little knee procedure done this week. What do we expect of him in that timeline for return?
Well, they didn't really say what was done. You're right. It was kind of a quiet little knee procedure. Look, it's not impossible to return to play 2 weeks after a knee scope. That was about the territory of Joe Mixon. But the difference between a Joe Mixon returning to play Xavien Howard, assuming they had the same procedure and he's medically able to, is, you know, it's just easier for an offensive player than a defensive player. An offensive player could dictate his cuts and limit his plays and know what he can do. A defensive player can't say, well, I'm not going to cover this type of route, or I'm not going to react in this way. You have to react. And so that makes it harder for Xavien Howard to return this next week.
A game I want to talk to you about a few players in, because we won't speak to you before Thursday's big game. It's a team you're familiar with in the Chargers. Huge game against the Chiefs, short week. What's that running back situation look like, you know, come Thursday night? Will Melvin Gordon kind of will his way back early? And what's the prognosis of Austin Eckler?
Well, Melvin Gordon, from the get-go, I thought that this was going to be their target, week 15 Thursday night game, and it seems to be. It's not a guarantee that he'll make it, and, you know, obviously we haven't seen too much. We haven't seen really any video of what he's been doing in practice, even in warm-ups, so it's hard to say. And it's kind of a weird week on Thursday when, you know, there's a lot of walkthroughs anyway. So what does a limited practice mean on a walkthrough, you know, in terms of their availability? So, but I think it's possible that Melvin Gordon will play. Austin Eckler is actually more up in the air. Right now, lots of confusing information. There was a report of a stinger. There, he's had some stingers before. Stingers obviously can knock you out for a while, especially if it's recurrent, but certainly easier for a running back as opposed to a guy like Tyron Smith, who's getting his head, neck, shoulder hit at almost every play when he's blocking. But recurrent stingers are trickier. And then there was also a report that he was dizzy. He said he was dizzy. Anthony Lynn, I think, said he was dizzy, which sort of implies head injury or concussion. But yet he spoke to the media, so he wasn't in the concussion protocol. So a lot to sort out there between Melvin Gordon and Austin Eckler. But Gordon is more straightforward. It's I think he's going to try and play, and we'll see effectiveness. Eckler will need to follow the news a little bit.
Positive news there for Chargers fans. Just one last one on that game. Eric Berry. We've seen him kind of work his way back. He was limited, you know, 2 weeks ago. We thought he might play against Baltimore. Now it looks like they're targeting this game. If Eric Berry returns, how effective do you think he can be?
Yeah, I think, you know, the Eric Berry watch for the last 6 weeks, as I was saying, was kind of silly. It wasn't going to happen. This time it's finally realistic. I think he will try and play. He's a vet. He knows his body. I think he can be effective. My bigger worry is, especially in a cold outdoor game, surfaces may be slippery or what have you, but also it's first game for him. And first game and first time back, you worry about a lot of reacclimation injuries in terms of muscle issues. So to me, it's not really about effectiveness. It's about getting through the game and without adding another injury to what he has.
Last tandem of injuries that I had, Dr. Chow, we saw LeSean McCoy get injured in the first quarter, didn't return. And while you talked to Austin Eckler discussing things with the media, LeSean McCoy declined to be interviewed after the game. Any insight as to what may plague one of the only playmakers Buffalo has on the offensive side of the ball?
Well, you know, there's a lot of reasons players decide not to talk. Sometimes because they think the injury is bad and they don't want to talk about it. And sometimes they're just frustrated, you know, and even if it's a mild hamstring. Hamstrings are kind of hard to judge by video. Okay, he grabbed at it, but that's maybe he grabbed at it and pulled up the second before he really tore it. Or maybe, you know, he grabbed at it because he felt it was bad and he was frustrated. So hard to say there, but, you know, also factoring in the record. I mean, what reason does he really have to push it at this point in time? So he might be out for a little bit.
That's the perfect segue into one of the game's top wide receivers who was mysteriously ruled out on Saturday. Of course, I guess when you take on the Washington Redskins, it really didn't have any impact on what the Giants were able to do. But Odell Beckham Jr., should we expect him back on the field this weekend as the Giants continue to try and play spoiler when they take on the Tennessee Titans?
Well, you know, the fact pattern doesn't fit. So I don't have a crystal ball, but the fact pattern doesn't fit. People talked about the quad contusion, but that happened 2 weeks ago. And he finished that game and he played the next week. Quad contusions typically don't get mysteriously worse. The week after he was injured and played, he was not on the injury report until Friday. And even then it was said he would play. Then comes Saturday. He was ruled out of the game yesterday. So, and then the coach, Pat Shurmur, said something about a lingering injury or issue. So all that fact pattern doesn't really fit in. So usually, this is what I always say, if something doesn't make sense from the outside, we just don't know the whole story. So there's something more to this story. I'm not saying it's nefarious. I'm not saying there's something that's going to be groundbreaking. But there's a piece of information we don't know where this fact pattern does not fit. You know, medically speaking, from the quad contusion, he should be fine to and good to go next week. But he really probably should have been good to go this week. So was he re-injured on Friday? And we don't know about that. And that's why it got worse on Saturday. And now he's out. Who knows?
There are very few players in the league more enigmatic than Odell Beckham. So we will definitely keep tabs on his status for the approaching game this weekend, about 6 days from now. He's one of the best game day follows on Twitter. You can follow Dr. Chow at Pro Football Doc for all of your injury updates, not only before the games, but in real time, so you can make those split-second decisions to help with a more profitable football season. Dr. Chow, can't thank you enough for your time this morning. Look forward to catching up with you same time next week.
Thanks, guys.
I'm a little disappointed, Payne, because I really thought Dr. Chow was going to take the opportunity to steal your baton and go on a Mike Tomlin rant of his own.
That would have been fun, but he's a professional, and I think there was a little misunderstanding. I wasn't really bashing Mike Tomlin because of his injury designations. It was more so his decision-making, which he touched on, which would have been funny to get a Dr. Chow rant on Tomlin, but that's neither here nor there. Interesting things going on for that Thursday night game. There's a lot of guys that are banged up. There's just so many guys that, you know, in the NFL this time of year, everyone's just so beat up, right? No one's 100%. You can't ask about everyone, but it will be interesting to monitor that Tyreek Hill situation a little bit.
Yeah, it does so many dynamic things for that Kansas City offense. We know without Kareem Hunt, the ground game lacked a little bit of the explosive potential. When you look at Ware, Spencer Ware and what he brought to the table, much more plotting and methodical, gave them the change of pace back they wanted. But without Tyreek Hill, you have to handicap Kansas City very differently. But again, we will cover that game in extensive detail about 72 hours from now. One last order of business, a good Monday Night Football game on the docket this evening. And we look at the numbers here, Payne. Seattle is a 3-point favorite at betonline.ag. We'll call it $1.20, the going rate right now. Total in this game sits at 46. Pete Carroll a chance to set the franchise record for regular season wins, surpassing Mike Holmgren with a W tonight. But I ask you this relatively straightforward, and I'm not going to say simple question, but are the Seahawks for real, given what we've seen? I mean, this is a team that's been outgained in two of its last three contests.
For real? I think you can ask that question probably about both teams.
True.
And I think it's odd that we're sitting here week 14 wondering about both teams. Seattle has beaten one team with a winning record, and it came all the way back in week 3 against the Cowboys. And they looked a little bit different back then, to say the least, right? Minnesota hasn't beaten a team with a winning record all season. So, you know, both are probably a little overrated. I think the one thing that I took a peek at, when you're looking at like pure yards per play adjusted for strength of schedule, Seattle's actually a negative 0.4 yards per play. Minnesota, a positive 0.4 yards per play. But the one thing about this game is you have two teams with massive home road splits. So I think that'll be interesting to see how that plays out tonight.
When you look at this Seattle team, I mean, they've been able to run the football effectively against just about everybody. They've gone for 155 yards in every game except for their win at Carolina, where Russell Wilson kind of took that one over late, made a lot of plays not only with his legs but his arm downfield. I mean, the Seahawks, one of their biggest weaknesses, they have a below-average pass defense when you look at yards per attempt, yards per completion. Do they have some of the playmakers on that side of the ball, in your opinion, that are capable of slowing down a tandem as dynamic as Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen? Keeping in mind, obviously, some of Kirk Cousins' struggles, as you alluded to, that this Vikings offense not nearly as effective when they go out on the highway.
You would think the Vikings are going to be able to move the ball through the air pretty efficiently here. And there's a couple reasons, right? I mean, I think that's what Minnesota does, right? If they can't throw it, they're not going to be very effective in any game. So you look at them overall, eighth in passing success rate. They don't put up like gobs of points, right? Because there's just not like this explosiveness through the air. And then you see like Kirk Cousins, he just finds himself on the ground a lot. Maybe that's the difference tonight, right? If the Vikings can hit a few chunk plays, Seattle gives up
loads of explosive plays. 10% of all quarterback throws have resulted in explosive plays. So that's one thing to kind of monitor. The other thing we talk about, and you have to address every time the Vikings play offensively, is their line, right? Can they protect Kirk Cousins? The guy's been pressured on 40% of his dropbacks. It's just getting ridiculous. But you look at that matchup, and you have a Seattle defense, 27th in pressure rate, 20th in sack rate. So if Cousins gets time, I think Minnesota's offense can do pretty well tonight, you know? On the ground, what's Minnesota going to do? I don't know, right? I mean, this offensive line just needs like a complete serious retooling in the offseason. Seattle isn't great defending the run. Maybe Minnesota can be somewhat balanced tonight. It's not going to take one of these, like, you know, 200 yards on the ground, but if you can at least like be balanced, you know, 75, 80 yards on the ground, maybe that provides the balance you need. If you listen to John DeFilippo this week, all week, really, press conference, any single time he did one, and there's two this week, he just talked about getting Dalvin Cook the ball more. And, you know, maybe it's on the ground in between the tackles. I think he's pretty effective in open space. I've watched the guy play every game of his life. I think maybe you utilize his speed in the pass game, right? Seattle's going to be without KJ Wright tonight. And if you look at what Seattle's done defensively, they allow over 10 yards per catch on running back passes this season. So potentially Cook as a threat out of the backfield. When you look at trend lines, which I think is important this time of year, Seattle's defense in the four key categories, right? Success rate, both running and passing, and explosiveness, both running and passing. Seattle's defense is trending downwards right now in all four of those key categories. So if Cousins has time, that will be the big thing. I think he'll be able to make some plays.
Well, and you mentioned Dalvin Cook over the last 2 weeks. Coach DeFilippo obviously doing, as he says he wants to again this week, 30 touches total, 19 carries, 103 yards, 11 receptions for 69 yards for the talented playmaker out of Florida State. When we look at the other side of the ball, Payne, the Vikings are going to be without Trey Wayans in their secondary. It looks like Holton Hill is going to get the start opposite Xavier Rhodes. Minnesota, what do they have to do to try and neutralize some of the effectiveness of either Seattle running the football, where they've stayed tried and true so far this year, or trying to make sure that Russell Wilson can't do what he does best, and that's extending plays with his legs?
Oh, it's perfect because it's both, right? And I think you need to first stop the ground game. And I think on paper, when you look at like the easy stuff to find, right, you're going to see like, oh, the Vikings run defense, they only allow 3.7 yards per rush attempt. It's top five in the NFL, and you probably think this is going to be easy, stopping the run. When you dig a little bit deeper, it's clear like Minnesota does a great job staying in their lanes. They keep their gap integrity. I don't think that's a shock with a Mike Zimmer defense that they're disciplined. But why that rushing number is so low is Minnesota doesn't allow the explosive runs. They're second in the NFL at big runs allowed, 27 they've given up all season in 12 games. But if you look down to down, Minnesota allows 50% of runs to grade successful. That's 25th in the NFL. So it'll be interesting to see if that Vikings run defense is as good as we think, because they're going to be tested tonight. DJ Fluker is out. I think that's a pretty big loss. He's Seattle's right guard. They like to run a lot of power over his side. So again, it sounds weird, but it's a decent loss there. 49% of Seattle's runs have graded successful when they rush behind the right guard position where DJ Fluker plays. That's the second best rate, running behind any lineman on that offense for Seattle. So I think it'll be felt a little bit. You mentioned Russell Wilson and potentially getting pressure to him. That is going to be key. I think the Vikings pass rush has been light years better with Everson Griffin back, obviously. When Minnesota does get pressure, they seem to get home, right? They finalize it. They get that sack. They're fourth in adjusted sack rate, and I think that's key because getting pressure to Russell Wilson just isn't enough. Like, you have to prevent that big play, I think. When you look, and this is always so tough because you look at the passer rating when pressured, and Russ is awesome. He's the second best, and it's because he looks to throw deep, which translates to better passer rating. So that Viking secondary, with Trey Wayne's out, I don't love him, so I don't know how big of a loss it is. I think it's more about Xavier Rhodes being healthy, but whoever's in that Viking secondary tonight, it's going to be about sticking with your men longer, right? When the play breaks down and Wilson starts to improvise, he's going to look for that kill shot. That's just what he does. So it's key to defend
for long stretches if you're the Minnesota secondary tonight. That's the big thing. If you can prevent the big play when Russ is under pressure and he improvises, you're going to have success because he's not very accurate overall. 48% passing success rate when he's under pressure. You look at guys like Eli Manning or Joe Flacco, they complete more balls when under pressure than Russell Wilson does. So just don't allow those game-changing explosive passes when Russ is improvising. I think you should be okay here.
And last but not least, anytime we talk about the Seahawks, especially playing at home in prime time, what kind of adjustments do we make for home field advantage, or how do we try and factor in some of those particular elements? I look at it, and of course, it's not a precise science for what we do. You hit the rewind button. Seattle on a short week was about a 3-point favorite against the Green Bay Packers. Very similar number tonight against the Vikings. I don't think any of us have the Vikings and Packers power rated close to the same. But in this kind of spot, knowing what's at stake as far as the NFC playoff picture, all the teams that lost over the weekend, I mean, one of the more difficult places to play in the entire league, I would presume. How do we try and quantify that?
So right off the bat with Seattle, they do have one of the larger home field advantages. And I think a lot of people were reluctant to give them more than 3.5. I think you have to. I think you're in big games like this. I think you're at a full-blown 4 for home field advantage for Seattle. And then I think when you look at potentially the areas where Minnesota has trouble, it's on the offensive line. And so communication is big there. You already have an offensive line that isn't very good. Now you're trying to communicate within a hostile environment that's very noisy. I think you're at a full 4 tonight for home field advantage.
Should be a hell of a game. We've seen this number kind of ping pong all over the place. Looked like there was an appetite to grab the 3.5. Number gets down to a flat 3. And some folks looking to lay it back. Total still holding pretty steady. I mean, 45-46 on the opener. You can see some 45.5 you shot, 46.5. Numbers right where they need to be. At least we should see some playoff caliber football tonight from the Pacific Northwest, a game I know I'm excited to watch. Any final words of wisdom on the Monday night game before we close up shop, my friend?
I don't have anything here, and there is a little battle going on. It'll be interesting to see where this line closes with this battle taking place. Two groups going head-to-head tonight. Minnesota plus 3.5 one took, and late last night, and then proceeding into the morning, we saw some Seattle get late. So this will be a fun game to watch and see how this transpires this evening. Certainly a good game that we'll be watching.
No, obviously. For sure. Much better than being able to tune out at halftime of watching Mark Sanchez last weekend lead the Redskins against that Philadelphia.
You didn't watch that?
I watched the first two drives of the third quarter, and then I went, nope, not watching the rest of this. Try to focus on some of the other things that were out there. You know, I can't remember what I watched, an NBA game, a hockey game. I don't know. I sure as shit wasn't spending my time watching that entire fourth quarter.
There was no third division Turkish soccer going on
Not at that hour. I mean, it's like early morning in Turkey at that time. You got to get up at like 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the morning. You want to watch that crap.
Sick human.
What can I say? Wired a little bit differently, and you're stuck with me down to 2 times a week now with college football hanging in the balance. But speaking of which, we'll have some announcements about the College Football Bowl podcast coming soon. The NFL schedule remains unchanged, at least for now. Thursday, we'll be right back with you talking about the biggest games, another great matchup in primetime between the Chargers and the Kansas City Chiefs. Special thanks to Dr. David Chow. You can follow him on Twitter at ProFootballDoc. He's with us every Monday throughout the course of the NFL regular season. You can follow Payne on Twitter at PayneInsider. I'm there as well at Todd Furman, of course. Most importantly, follow the podcast at BetTheBoardPod. Final parting shots, Payne, before I'm going to board this thing up and you get a 48-hour reprieve of dealing with me.
No, I got nothing. All right. I got nothing. I feel like you're onto something here. Are you going to a doctor's appointment?
Am I going to a doctor's appointment? No, I'm not going to a doctor's appointment. You're the one that's got a thumb that's going to get amputated by the time we have the podcast this time next week. We got arthritis. We got, I'm not quite sure. You're an old man over there falling apart. I mean, it's what happens when you don't leave the house for 2 weeks during football season.
I'm falling apart. I did get out. I went to the Saturday, got out to watch the Syracuse game a little bit. Ty's battle hitting big shots. So I did. I got out Saturday.
Yeah, a far cry from the Billy Owens-led Orange against the Georgetown greats watching those two idiots programs right now in a rock fight. But I don't want to.
I was more of a John Wallace guy.
I could see that. Lawrence Moten, yeah. Was he one that slid right into your wheelhouse as well?
Yeah, I wasn't a huge Moten guy. And then obviously as I got a little bit older, you had that trio of Hakeem Warwick,
yeah.
Mello, and who was the other guy? Was that McNamara? Nah.
I figured you were gonna tell our listeners you had a poster of Jerry McNamara hanging on your wall.
Good assistant coach now. All right, let's get out of here.
All right, we've done enough damage for a Monday morning. Best of luck to all of you, our Bet the Board loyal listeners, for however you choose to proceed on tonight's game between the Seahawks and the Minnesota Vikings. Hopefully, we'll see you at the window.